Right, we will speak a little bit about the Netziv. The Netziv is a Rashi Tevis, Natali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin. The family name was Berlin. And he was born in the city Mir. There was a yeshiva Mir that was founded in 1815. But at a very young age, before Bar Mitzvah, he went to learn in Valozhin. Valozhin was the biggest yeshiva at that time in Lithuania. And he went to learn before his Bar Mitzvah. And the yeshiva was founded in 1801, 1802, something like that, by Rav Chaim Volozhin, who was the foremost student of the Vilna Gaon. And after he passed away, so his son, Rav Yitzchok Volozhin, Rav Yitzchok, took over the leadership of the yeshiva. After he passed away, his son-in-law, Rav Blazer Ritche, Rav Blazer Yitzchok, became the Rosh Yeshiva. And the Netziv, at just barely Bar Mitzvah, married a daughter of Rav Yitzchok Lev Volozhin. She was a few years older than him. I remember once Rav Soloveitcher was trying to set up one of the boys to meet a girl who was several years older than him. So the boy was making fun about the fact that Rav Soloveitcher didn't realize the girl was older than him. So Mrs. Meiselman said, "That's okay, in our family, we're not upset about that." Because the Netziv's first wife, the daughter of Rav Yitzchok Volozhin, was several years older than her husband. So after Rav Blazer Ritche passed away, he was the oldest son-in-law of Rav Yitzchok Volozhin. So then the Netziv was appointed to be the Rosh Yeshiva. Volozhin Yeshiva lasted for about 90 years. It was founded in something like 1801, 1802, and is closed by the Russian government in 1892. The Russian government kept on insisting for a few years before it was closed. They kept on insisting that they have to introduce secular studies in the yeshiva. And they kept on pressuring more and more secular studies. So first the yeshiva gave in. They introduced secular studies. Some of the students did attend, some of the students didn't attend. And then the government was pushing so much that they said the Jews won't be able to, if they're just going to learn Torah, they won't be able to make a living, so they have to have secular studies in order to make a living. And they kept on insisting you have to have so much secular studies in the Beis Medrash has to be locked most of the day. And you can only learn like 2 hours a day Gemara, the rest of the day secular studies. So then there was a big meeting of the Rabbanim. The Or Sameach, I think they say, Or Sameach sent out the invitation to attend the meeting to discuss whether they should, is it proper to keep the yeshiva open if they'll only be able to have 2 hours a day, something like that, learning of Torah. Many Rabbanim felt that they should still have the yeshiva. It's better to have 2 hours a day than to have nothing. The story goes, Rav Soloveitcher told over the story, the Chafetz Chaim was not invited to attend this meeting, but he came uninvited, and he came to the Or Sameach, who sent out the invitations. He came to the city where the meeting was going to take place, and he visited the Or Sameach in his room, in his hotel room, and he asked him, "I didn't get an invitation. How come?" So the Or Sameach told him that we only invited big rabbis from big cities. You're a little rabbi from a little city, and not invited, and don't come. So he felt very hurt. So he went to Rav Chaim Soloveitcher, and he told him what happened. So Rav Chaim asked, "Well, what is your opinion? What do you plan to say? That we should close the yeshiva or keep it open?" So he says he thinks they have to close the yeshiva. So Rav Chaim said, "That's my opinion. I'm inviting you. You come to the yeshiva. You come to the meeting. And you say your position, and I'm going to second it, and that's going to be the end. That's going to be the whole. There isn't going to be any conversation." So that's what happened. The Rav Chaim didn't allow any discussion on the topic, and he just said, "I'm world famous. Everybody knows Rav Chaim Soloveitcher. Closing the yeshiva. That's all." Chafetz Chaim suggested it. Rav Chaim seconded it, and that was the end of the whole discussion. So they said that Rav Chaim felt wasn't proper of the Or Sameach to embarrass the Chafetz Chaim like that. So the next time they had a meeting of all the rabbis together, so he was making fun of it. Rav Chaim held the Or Sameach was the greatest goyin of the generation, but he thought it wasn't right the way he insulted the Chafetz Chaim to tell him that he's not invited, he shouldn't come. Anyway, so it's interesting, the Netziv, when he was very young, when he was a teenager, I think after he got married, when he was a teenager, he got married, he was barely bar mitzvah, and the girl was a few years older than him, so he decided to write a commentary on the Shiltas. it's very interesting. The Netziv's sister, the maiden name was Berlin. Naftali to Yehuda Berlin. His sister was married to the one who wrote the Aruch HaShulchan, who also wrote, the two brothers-in-law both wrote commentaries on the Shiltas. Aruch HaShulchan, once in a while, we refer to his commentary on the Shiltas. It's interesting that two people in the same generation had the same idea to write a commentary on the Shiltas. Hardly anybody ever reads the Shiltas, and they both decided that it's quoted so often in Tosfos and in the Shulchan Aruch that it's valuable, it would be a value to write a commentary. It's interesting that in more recent years, two people decided to write a commentary on the Tosefta. Rav Kalabramsky and Rav Shaul Lieberman, they both decided the same generation, sort of. Both decided to write the commentaries on the Tosefta. The Gemara, every other page, or every page, the Gemara quotes the Tosefta, and there wasn't really a good commentary, so they both wrote. When the Netziv published his, years later, when he published his commentary on the Shiltas, he published it in three different volumes, and he wrote the Hakdama, an introduction. It's not really an introduction to his commentaries, not an introduction to the Shiltas, and not really an introduction to his commentary on the Shiltas. It's really a general introduction to all of Torah Shebaal Peh. Like the Prima Godim wrote what he calls a Psicha Kolel, the Aruch Chaim, general introduction to Aruch Chaim. It's really a general introduction to the whole Torah Shebaal Peh. Then at the end of Psicha Kolelis of the Prima Godim, he writes Psicha Tilchas Kriya Shema, Psicha Tilchas Tfilo, Tilchas Shabbos, Tilchas Pesach. He writes introductions to Aruch Chaim, but the bulk of the Psicha to Aruch Chaim is really a general introduction to all of Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Netziv did the same. He wrote Kidmas HaEmek, Hakdama, to his commentary on the Shiltas. It's really a Hakdama to all of Torah Shebaal Peh. And he wrote it in the three installments. So when he published the first volume of the Shiltas, Shiltas is drushes that have halachas, piskei halachas, on the Parshiyos HaShavua, written by Rabbi Choy, who lived in the days of the Goinim. I don't think he himself was from the Goinim. The Goinim mean the president of the yeshiva whose responsibility was to raise the money. So I don't think Rabbi Choy was one of the Goinim. He lived in the days of the Goinim. So the Netziv wrote his general introduction to all of Torah Shabbat in installments. And when he published the first volume of the Shiltas on Bereishis and Shemos, he put out the first installment of the introduction. When he put out the Shiltas on Vayikra, so he wrote up and he published the beginning of that volume, the second installment in this general introduction to Torah Shabbat. And when he put out the third volume of the Shiltas by Midban Dvarim, so he wrote the final third installment of his introduction. So now when Mosad Rav Kook publishes it, so they don't print the three installments in three different volumes, they print all three together. So people don't understand, why is it divided into three parts? Why doesn't it just go straight? The answer is that originally when it was printed, it came out in installments. And now they have, you can get this introduction to all of Torah Shebaal Peh in a separate volume, where they give you, in the footnotes, they give you all of the Marmikaimus of all of the sources that the Netziv is quoting. Very often he'll quote a Loshon, the Gemara doesn't tell you where it comes from. He'll quote a Loshon of Tosfos, a Loshon of the Rambam, doesn't always tell you where. So in the new editions now, they give you all the Marmikam. So he has a lot of very fascinating ideas, and his Hakdama to his general Hakdama to Torah Shabbat Peh. One of the many fascinating ideas he has is the Rambam in his Hakdama to the Pirush HaMishnayos writes the five different parts of Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Rambam says, one part of Torah Shebaal Peh is Halacha L'Moshe Misina. Then the Rambam says, there aren't so many. Most of Torah Shebaal Peh, the bulk of Torah Shebaal Peh, are the drushes that are based on the Midrash HaTorah Nidresh, spent by reading in between the lines. The pasuk switches from singular to plural, from masculine to feminine. There's an extra phrase, a missing phrase, an extra letter, missing letter. So the Gemara reads everything in between the lines of the Chumash. That's the bulk of the Torah Shebaal Peh. And then there's Halacha L'Moshe Misina. So the Rambam says, there aren't so many. I will give you a full list, a complete list of all of the Halachas L'Moshe Misina. And he gives a short listing. So on the bottom of that, this introduction of the Rambam to the Pirush HaMishnayos is printed in the back of all the Gemara's Brachas. So on the bottom of the page, in all the standard editions, they refer you to Chavis Yoyer, who's bothered with the kasha. The Rambam left out two-thirds. He only wrote one-third. He left out more than he wrote in the listing of the halachas l'mashim sinai. How come the Rambam left out so much? He doesn't. This is a full listing of all of the halachas l'mashim sinai. He forgot 2/3 of them. So the Chabad Zior is bothered with the kasha. So the Netziv suggests an answer, and he says if you check through the Rambam, when the Gemara says halacha l'mashim sinai, the Rambam writes halacha l'mashim sinai. When the Gemara writes Gemara Gemiri law, Hilchas of Gemiri law. So Rashi, Tosfos, and the Rosh will write that that's halacha l'mashim sinai. So the Rambam, consistently, whenever the Gemara says Gemara Gemiri law, Hilchas of Gemiri law, the Rambam will write Mipi Hashmua Lomdu. He doesn't call it halacha l'mashim sinai. So the Netziv thinks that the Rambam thought that those are not halachas l'mashim sinai. All the 2/3 of all the halachas that the Chabad Zior complains that the Rambam left out from his listing. He says the Rambam didn't think that those halachas l'mashim sinai. Gemara Gemira La Hilchas Gemira La means that this din was established centuries ago, and we forgot. And we forgot the derivation. But it's really learned out by reading in between the lines. It wasn't halachas l'mashim sinai. That was a very fascinating idea. There's another very fascinating idea. The last Mishnah in Uktzin has a cryptic, mysterious statement. Baruch will grant every tzaddik 310 olamos. What in the world is that all about? What are the 300 olamos? So the Netziv has a very fascinating interpretation. He had many students who learned in Valojin, who later on went into physics or chemistry or banking or biology, whatever. They never went to college. Some of them went to university later, but a lot of them never went. So he says, the Paskin Shailus in all areas of halacha, you have to know, in certain areas you have to know medicine, certain areas you have to know physics, you have to know chemistry, you have to know banking. So if a person is sitting and learning the whole time, so he's not going to know all the secular now. How can he Paskin Shailus in the area? So they say that Rav Shlomo Zalman was a super genius. Whenever he would have a Shaila, so he would ask an expert in the field to please give him a lecture for an hour on that topic. And then at the end of the presentation, he would ask, could I ask you a favor, let's stay another few minutes. Let me say it over to you and tell me if I understood it correctly. And they say he had the knack of saying it over in 5 minutes clearer than the expert told it to him in the hour. So that's what the Netziv writes in the Hakdama. That's one of the ideas. He has a lot of ideas in the Hakdama. One of the many ideas he has is that in order the tzaddik, the shayah lamas means a tzaddik who has to pass kashalas. And he has to know physics, chemistry, biology, medicine. He doesn't know any of this. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu will grant him a matana without going to university. He'll be able to pick up, he says, maybe the Tanaim thought that there are 310 basic courses that you have to take in universities to know all there is to know in Chachmas Olam. Physics, chemistry, mathematics, everything, all together, 310 courses. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu granted tzaddikim, the Talmid Chacham, have to pass on the Shailos, the ability, the knack, to pick everything up without going to university. An original interpretation. Then he has a beautiful, very beautiful comment. The Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim says that Yoshio HaMelech was a king toward the end of the Bais Rishon period, was going as the Luchas, the Aron with the Luchas, in the chamber in the basement that was specially built by Shlomo HaMelech when he built the first Beis HaMikdash. It was given by his father David HaMelech, who was given from the Navi, Megillah B'Ksav, that had the whole layout of what's going to be in the Beis HaMikdash. So in the initial plan, it was supposed to be a chamber in the basement to house the Luchas when the time will come to remove the Luchas from upstairs. So was it that Yoshua HaMelech was afraid that the enemy would come and capture the Luchas? So the Pasuk doesn't seem to say that. Pasuk gives some kind of a different explanation. Very, very obscure, very unclear. So the Netziv suggests in his introduction to the Torah Sheba'al Peh that Kozman, the Sanhedrin, was Kozman, the Rabbanim, were living in Eretz Yisrael. Sanhedrin was meeting in the Lishkas HaGozes, close to the Mizbeach, close to the Aron. So the Ramban HaChumash writes, they had sort of a hashras Ruach HaKodesh to come up with the psalkim, the correct answer to all the shailas. They had this Yad HaDishmaya, and they didn't have to work hard. They didn't have to work with the Pulpul HaShalter to figure out why the din should be learned that. And Yoshua Melech knew that they were going to go into Golus in another couple of years, and they're going to have to develop a different derech of learning, a derech of Shakla Batari and Pilpul, to argue with each other till you come up to Maskana. So that's why he was going as the Luchas, so the last years of the Vice Regent, the Sanhedrin wouldn't have that Siyata Dishmad, they wouldn't have that the divine assistance to come up with the Psak 1, 2, 3. They would have to develop the new derech HaLimud of Pilpul Shel Torah. And that's this will lead them into Golus Bavel and all the years of Golus that we're going to have to work out the Psakim like that through asking kashas and quoting all the Gemaras. So this he has in a lot of places. This idea of Talmud Bavli as opposed to Talmud Yerushalmi, that the Talmud Bavli was worked on with a lot of Pilpul Shel Torah. The Netziv has came to the yeshiva at a very young age. He came before Bar Mitzvah. And he writes in one place in his commentary on the Shiltas, he writes that Nachlas David was still alive. Nachlas David was one of the Talmidim Rav Chaim Volozhiner, from the early Talmidim in Volozhin. And he left the yeshiva. And then Rav Chaim Volozhiner invited him to come back and give shurim in the yeshiva during his lifetime. Very strange that in whole Nachlas David, I think it only quotes Nachlas David on Baba Kama, Baba Metziah. There were other volumes, but then he hardly quotes Rav Chaim Volozhiner. Maybe once or twice. He hardly quotes him. But so the Netziv writes, when he came to learn the yeshiva, Nachlas David was still alive. And he remembers hearing from the Nachlas David that the Psak HaMekubal from Rav Chaim Volozhiner was that if you have a Chayla Mesukan on Shabbos or Yom Kippur, not only are you allowed to be Mechal Shabbos and violate Yisurim to save his life, the Psak is like the Rambam that called Tzarachov. You're allowed to do called Tzarachov, just like Chol. This Rav Soloveitchik made this famous, that the only time you have a person eat Pachas on Yom Kippur, you tell a person to eat Pachas Mikishir, if he's a healthy person, but we're afraid if he's going to fast, he's going to get sick. But let's say he already is sick. He is Bisakana, and we're trying to pull him out of the Sakana. Then the Psak was, the Rav Chaim Soloveitchik used to Paskin, that you don't have to eat pachas mikashir. Based on the Rambam, you're allowed to do kol tzarachav. You treat the patient, he's deathly sick, and you're trying to pull him out from the sakana, so you don't have to go for pachas mikashir. Rav Soloveitchik said it over, and Rav Velvela Soloveitchik writes it up in his sefer on the Rambam. He writes it as if it was Rav Chaim's original psak, and he had to defend, the Rav Chaim had to defend his psak, so he gave a whole argument. And Rav Belvila shows how it fits into the Gemara and how he answers all the kashas. Mishnah Brura doesn't accept that psak of the Magen Mishnah. The Kol Tzarachav is mutter, even on Melachas Araisa. So the Mishnah Brura has a whole bunch of kashas. Rav Belvila Salvation is safe, and the Rambam shows how all the kashas are a misunderstanding of this shita. He shows that nothing is really difficult. So Rav Salvation always used to say it over as if this was an original psak of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and that's how the Rav Dovel also writes like that. Ziv is Rav Chaim's Chiddush. And then Ziv writes this. This was the Psak HaMekubal from day number one in Volozhin. Rav Chaim Volozhin used to pass like that. Truth in the matter, you look in the Mishnah Brura, Hilchos Yom Kippur, he says it also. But everybody skips that line in the Mishnah Brura, that if the person is already Chayla Mesukan, then you don't insist that he should eat Pachas, make sure he just eats regular. So he says this was the Psak HaMekubal in Volozhin from Rav Chaim Volozhiner. It's interesting that it's Netziv in his commentary, the end of Chumash Vayikra, at the end of B'chukosai, Rashi writes in his commentary on Chumash, the Pasuk says, "Chal ma'aseh b'ochel b'tzon kodosh she'ya v'tachas ha'shavet ha'asiri yeh kodosh l'Hashem." The Chumash has, toward the end of B'chukosai, there's an institution on ma'aseh behem. The ma'aseh behem is a korban that you bring to the Beis HaMikdash. Who eats the ma'aseh behem? Who does it belong to? So Rashi says, it doesn't say anywhere in Tanakh, it doesn't say anywhere in Mishnah or Gemara that you give it to the Kohanim. So the answer is the farmer eats in himself. Farmer brings the carbon to the Beis HaMikdash and he eats. This is in disagreement with several Ga'onim. Many Ga'onim were of the opinion that the Gemara says that Rechav Talad Matas Kahuna. So the Ga'onim were of the opinion that their different opinion, how do you count? There are more than 24 Matas Kahuna. So the different opinion, how do you make the Cheshbon? Many are included together. So the Gaon felt that Ma'ase Behem is one of the 24. Rashi is disagreeing. Rashi says there is no such thing. So then it's even his commentary is bothered with Akasha that it's a Beferish Pasuk in Divrei HaYomim that when they came back in the beginning of the Vaisheni period, so they were mafresh, the farmers were mafresh ma'aser b'hem, and they gave it to the Kohanim. So it says the Pharisees said they gave it to the Kohanim. How does Rashi say that it doesn't say anywhere? So the Netziv writes that he was very young when he came to learn about Lojin, and Rav Chaim Lojin had passed away already. He married the daughter of Bitzel. Bitzel was still alive at that time, but there were still people who heard things from the Vilna Gaon, and people who heard things from Rav Chaim Lojin, the name of the Vilna Gaon. So they told him when he first came to the yeshiva, a chiddush in the name of the Vilna Gaon. Some people today deny it. It can't be the Vilna Gaon said it because it's nonsense. It's not true. The Vilna Gaon said that the Gemara says that eating matzah is an obligation. Laila harishon chayva, first night of Pesach when you have the Seder, it's an obligation to eat kazayis matzah. Mekami elach rishus. The rest of Pesach, it's optional. If you're hungry, you want to eat, you can't eat chametz, can't eat bread, so you eat matzah. So they quote the name of the Vilna Gaon. Rishus doesn't mean absolutely rishus. It means it's a mitzvah so rishus. There's such a concept as a mitzvah so rishus. You're not obligated to do something, but if you go ahead and you volunteer to do it, you have a mitzvah kiyumis. There's a mitzvah kiyumis and a mitzvah kiyumis. So there are people alive today who say, it can't be the Vilna Gaon ever said it because it doesn't make sense. There is no such thing as a mitzvah kiyumis. A mitzvah means mitzvah, a commandment, an obligation. How can you be that you're not obligated? There's no commandment to do it, but if you do it, you have a mitzvah kiyumis. There is no such thing. So the Netziv writes, he came to Valojin when he was very young, and there was still people who said over that that's what the Vilna Gaon said, that there's such a thing as a mitzvah, so rishus. So based on that, by us, it's a double pushit. We have already heard it so many times. So today, Rav Soloveitchik, every other week, he was saying, this is a mitzvah, so rishus. He had a lot of things like that. A mitzvah, kiyumis, even though you're not mechuyev. The Ramban in the Sefer HaMitzvah disagrees with the Rama. The Rama holds that the obligation to daven is once a day, every day, min haTorah, and Tvila de Rabbanan means the obligation to daven three times a day is min deRabbanan. But the particular Nusach HaTvila, the text of the Shemana Esrei, that's min deRabbanan. But it's a biblical obligation to daven once a day, every day. Ramban disagrees, says even the obligation to daven once a day, every day is only min deRabbanan. But he says the chiyuv hatfila is the rabbanon, but the inyan hatfila is the rest. What do you mean the inyan hatfila? Rav Soloveitchik says it's a mitzvah kiyumis. If you daven, there is a kiyum a mitzvah. You're not mechuyev to. Rav Soloveitchik said by Kriyas HaTorah also the fact that once every 7 years is a mitzvah of hakel, and on the Kangolan Yom Kippur has a din deraisa, has to lay in the parsha and achrei moed. So that shows that even all year long, whenever you're laying Kriyas HaTorah b'tzibur, there's a mitzvah kiyumis. If it exists, sometimes it's a mitzvah chiyuvis, then it shows that there's always a mitzvah kiyuv. As a later, had a lot of things that are mitzvah kiyuvis. So the Netziv says he heard this in the name of the Vilna Gaon when he was very young, when he first came to the yeshiva, before bar mitzvah, and he thinks that maybe that's the answer to Rashi, that ma'isa be'ema, you're not mechuyev to give it to the Kohanim, but the Pasuk in Dibra Yom says that he gave it, so he said maybe Rashi holds that that's a mitzvah kiyuvis. Then he's prepared to extend it. The Gemara says in Bob Mitzvah Daf Peches, I said, called to us, Zarecha, Yotzi, Asad, Shana, Shana. The Gemara says, Zarecha, that Shalchot, you grew in your farm. If the table grew in someone else's farm, then Lakuach is Potem and Atoira, the Mashrosh is from Samais, it's only mid the Rabbonim. So the problem is, there's so many Gemaras that seem to contradict this. The Taisis works on the Kashas. Taisis has different opinions when Lakuach is Potem, when it's Chayv. So then it says, maybe Lakuach is Potem and Atoira. But if you're mafresh to Mizamaisis, it's chal min atorah. Maybe it's a mitzvah kiyumis. And then you have the Ravid and the Kosov Sham has such an idea that even if you hold the Ravid's opinion, it's like Rashi and Tosis, the mitzvah min atorah, the obligation to be mafresh, Shumas and Mizamaisis min atorah only applies to Dogon Tirish v'Yitzer, Hamesh is Mei Dogon, and Tirish is grape juice and wine. And grapes, and Yitzhar is olive oil and olives, Zeisim Hadar, Hachayim Minatera, and everything else is only the Rabbanon, but if you're Mafrish, maybe the Hafrash is Chal Minatera. The Rabbi has like that, and then he discusses maybe there's a difference between Truma that you were obligated to be Mafrish and Truma that's only a mitzvah Giyum. So, but yes, we're so used to this idea, but the Netziv writes it as a big breakthrough, there's a big Kiddush. He says, when he first came to the Yeshiva, there were still people who heard it in the name of the Vilna Gaon, so apparently it's authentic. And his wife was a few years older than him, and she died when he was in his 50s, I think, when he was young. And after she died, the Netziv's sister, a maid named was Berlin, was married to the one who later wrote the author the Aruch HaShulchan. The Netziv had a son from his first wife, that was Rav Chaim Berlin. He was a big Talmud Chacham. He was a rabbi in Moscow in different communities. Towards the end of the Netziv's presidency in the yeshiva, he thought that his son, Rav Chaim Berlin, would be a good person to take over the leadership of the yeshiva. So he appointed, instead of appointing Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who was giving shiurim there, he appointed his son, Rav Chaim Berlin. That was his son from the first wife, to be the Rosh Yeshiva. The Talmidim felt that it was an insult to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, because Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was so much greater than Rav Chaim Berlin, so they made a whole riot in the yeshiva. They didn't let him say shiurim, and they saw to it that they eased him out. And then he moved to Eretz Yisrael. Later on, he moved to Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, and he died there. So Rav Chaim Berlin was the son of the Netziv from the first wife. And then when the Netziv's first wife passed away, so the Meshulach from the yeshiva used to go around to raise money. And when he came to came to the community where the Aruch HaShulchan was the rabbi, before he was the rabbi in the Vardak, the previous position. So they came to raise money, and they didn't know. He mentioned that the wife of the Netziv passed away, and they're looking for a shidduch. He wants to marry his second wife. So the Aruch HaShulchan had a daughter who was married to a fellow who was a wealthy man who was learned, and she ran away from her husband. She decided that he's an Amharit. So he just sits over the Amhar, but he doesn't understand what he's learning. So she ran away from her husband, and she was hiding in the forest because it was against the law to run away from your husband. So the police were looking for her in the forest. And then after a couple of days went by, the police gave up on finding her. So she ran back home to her parents. And the parents were very upset. What, you ran away from your husband? So she says, he's an Amoritz. So they said, you'll be an Aguna for the rest of your life. He's never going to give you a get. What, you run away? So she says, she'd rather be an Aguna than live with an Amoritz. So finally, he gave her a get. And then they said, who's going to want to marry you? Who did an embarrassment to marry a Grusha? So she said, she'd rather be single for the rest of her life than to live with an Amoritz. So when Meshulach and Yeshiva came to tell the Aruch HaShulchan, apparently they didn't hear that the first wife of the Netziv passed away. Mrs. Aruch HaShulchan was the sister of the Netziv. So they hadn't heard. So the Meshulach told them that the Netziv's first wife passed away and they're looking for a shidduch. So the daughter was by the parents then. So she said, he's a Talmid Chacham. I'll agree to marry him. She was significantly younger than her uncle, the Netziv. So the first they thought it was a joke. And then, so they made up, the Netziv with his sister made up. The Aruch HaShulchan at that time was switching position. He was going to move to Nevardik. That was his later position. He was a rabbi in Nevardik. So he wasn't able to go to make the shidduch. So his wife, the sister of the Netziv, went. And they decided to meet at a midpoint. The Netziv came from Balazhan and she came from the village where she lived. And then she with the daughter. And then they decided that he's going to marry her. So the Netziv had a son from the second wife. That was Rav Meir Bar Ilan. He changed his name to Bar Ilan after he moved to Eretz Yisrael. And he wrote a biography of his father. He wrote a biography that was printed by the Mizrahi. He was a Mizrahi leader. He was one of the big leaders of Mizrahi. They say that Chafetz Chaim said, obviously, he didn't know his father well. If he would have known the Netziv well, he would never have joined the Mizrahi. The Mizrahi at that time was not, now it's much better than it used to be, apparently. It was frowned upon. But anyway, he wrote a book, a biography of his father. That's called Rabban Shel Yisrael. He has a whole chapter about his mother's heroism, that she ran away from her first husband because she was convinced that he's an Am Haaretz. And then she married the Netziv, who was significantly older than her, and she helped him run the yeshiva and so on. So this is all written up in this fascinating way. It's called Rabban Shel Yisrael. A son-in-law of the Netziv Rabbi Shapira, Rabbi Bala Ojana, who also gave shiurim in the yeshiva. There was a famous machlokes, which is Nagia Halacha Lamaise, between the Netziv and the son of Rabbi Foil. It's part of it is in Chuvas HaNetziv, in the Meshav Dava, part of it is in the Stechemed. The Stechemed used to correspond with all the Rabbonim, because he was a Sfardi from Hebron, and he got a Rabbonim somewhere in Uzbekistan or something like that. They had different Minhogim and different Sokim, and he didn't know whether they were authentic or not. So he used to correspond with all the Rabbonim, all the big Rabbonim in Europe, to find out whether there's such Minhogim, is there any Dita, any Shita like that. And then this was the beginning of his whole Stechemed. Then he wrote, then he put out a whole encyclopedia of Halacha. So there was a, so he, the Stechemed writes up this Machlokes. The Gemara has a din that the Shiva, the Avelus, begins after Stimas HaGadol. And Stimas HaGadol means the Gemara HaKfura. That's how Tosfos. Rashi has a different shot. Rashi learns Stimas HaGadol means the Gadol HaDafik is the lid on the coffin and the walls on the side. So when you put the mace in the coffin, even before you bury him, Rashi holds the Shiva begins. We don't pass like Rashi. We pass like Tosfos. Tosfos brings a lot of rise that the Gerlol means the Matzeva. So if when you bury the person, you fill up the grave and you're going to put a Matzeva the same day, so the Shiva does begin to Limar HaKfura till you put up the Matzeva. Now the meaning is that we don't put a Matzeva the same day. You wait till the end of a year or not, so you wait till the end of the Shloshim, whatever. So when you complete the kfura, when you fill in a whole grave, that's the Gemara kfura, then the Avelus begins. So the Gemara has in Moed Kot, and Eilam Megalchen, the third paragraph, so the Gemara has a statement, what if they plan to take the body to bury him in a different place? There was a common practice that they would take Mason from Babel to bury them in Eretz Yisrael. The Pischa Chuv in Yerudea quotes the Talmud Yerushalmi, that some of the Amoraim were unhappy about this practice, and they would make fun of the practice. They would quote the pasuk in yesterday's haftarah, "Batavova tatamu es artzi." You bring all the dead bodies to Eretz Yisrael. You're introducing tumah to Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam says, "What do you need it for?" But the Chachmei Babel felt that it is an inyan to be buried in Eretz Yisrael as opposed to being buried in Chutz Laaretz. Is an inyan. So they had that practice. It seemed to be a proper practice. Some Rabbanim today feel it's not practice, not proper. But the vote of Thomas Hartz, but most assume that it's commendable. So the Gemara says, when the caravan, or when the wagon leaves the city, when the relatives go along with the people who are going to take the body to Eretz Yisrael, and then they leave the city, and the relatives remain behind, or the plane, let's say, they put the body in the cargo section on the plane, and the relatives are not going to go along. So those who are not going to go along start the shiva right away. The moral lotion is when the people taking the aura to Eretz Yisrael leave. So that's the Gemar HaHisaskus and the Kfura. Usually the Avelus begins with the Gemar HaKfura. Stimus HaGel means when you put up the Matzeva. And if all you're going to do is be Malab and Amaze till the gates of the city, and then that's all. So that's the Gemar of your Hisaskus and the Kfura. So the shaila was, what if they notify a person by telegraph, by telephone, telegraph, he talks in the nation of telegraph, that a relative died in a different continent, in a different country, and he's not going to go to the funeral. He's going to stay where he is. So when does the Avelus begin? So the Netziv was of the opinion that the Avelus doesn't begin until after the Kfura, because that's always the din. The Avelus begins at the Gemara Kfura, or the Gemar HaHisaskus in the Kfura. So here, where the person doesn't plan to go at all, he knows they're going to bury them. He knows the person that they sent him a telegraph. The person died today, and the Kfura is going to be tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock. And we know the difference in the time zones, and we know exactly when the Kfura is going to take place. We can call on the phone. So the Shiva doesn't begin until after the Kfura takes place. And before the Second World War, most of the Rabbanim paskan like the Netziv, that the Kfura, that the Avelus doesn't begin until after the Kfura takes place, the next day or 2 days later. And Rabbi Foil Bala Ojana disagreed. In recent years, after the war, so the majority of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein writes like that, the majority of the poskim say like Rabbi Foil, that the Avelus doesn't take place until after the Kfura because it's an Einim before. But if he's not being Misasik in the Kfura, so the Avelus begins right away. They notify him that a relative died, and he's not going to go to the Kfura. So the Shiva begins right away. Rav Soloveitchik said in the name of his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, a psak on this, because this was a famous machlokes. There were tshuvas that are called Beis Aharon by Rabbi Aaron Wolkin. He was a rabbi in Pinsk. He was a prominent Talmid Chacham. So he has very nice tshuvas. Chacham Avadi quotes it every so often. Other poskim quote it. So he has a tshuva he discusses. So he quotes Mori v'Rabbi, he learned the Maloshim. He says, Mori v'Rabbi, my Rebbe, then it's if asking that the Shiva does begin at the left of the Kfura that's going to take place, because he's not going to participate in the Kfura at all. So he can't say the Shiva begins at the Gmar HaSaska. There is no Saskas. So the Shiva does begin to the left of the Kfura. And the son-in-law of the Tzibra, before Maloshim, held not so. So he gives the Psak Halach Debram Mekel Ba'ovom. He says, he can be Mekel. So that's what Rav Soloveitchik said, B'shem Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. He said that we can say halachic that I'll make a ball even a tartar of sasri. So you don't have to begin the Shiva till 2 days later, when then the kura is going to take place. And you finish the Shiva, the hokel, in the other direction, if you started 2 days earlier. So you're only going to have Shiva 4.5 days instead of 6.5 days. It'll be 5.5 days. That's based on a Havaraya. There's such a Ran B'Shem the Ramban, the beginning of Exodus, that this halacha the Ram Mekal Ba'ov, even if it's a Tarte de Sasri. You can't say Sveka the Rabban, the Kula Tarte de Sasri, but halacha the Ram Mekal is even with Tarte de Sasri. That's a psak I can see for Talmid Chachamim. You can give such a psak for Balabos. I don't know if it's right to give such a psak. The Ramon Yeridei and Hilchas HaRuah sees a Beheter as a cloud based on the Gemara and Sanhedrin in the beginning, that a Chacham is not allowed to give a Psak HaTamur LaRabim, the people who think that he's crazy. What do you mean? You only sit Shiva 4.5 days. You start from the latest man, and you end as if you started from the earliest man. It should be, the din should be like that, but I don't think the public will go for that. So that was the son-in-law of... There's one of the sons-in-law of the Netziv, Rabbi Fol Shapira, and he was the father-in-law of Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. The Netziv was Rosh Yeshiva for a long, long time, for the last 39 years of Alosh, until it was closed by the government. For many years, nobody understood why the government give them a hard time. What do they care if the Jews won't make a living? What do they feel so bad for the Jews? They felt the Rachmanis that they have to have secular education so they'll be able to make a parnasa. So they won't make a parnasa. What did they care? So no one ever knew what the secret was until the Russian government made public the secret files of the KGB. And then they found, there's a professor, Shaul Stempfer, who wrote a book about the development of the Lithuanian yeshivas. So he writes about Volozhin and Mir and so on, all the different yeshivas and tells. Very fascinating. So he writes, they finally found out what was going on. There was a machlokes in the yeshiva about Musa, whether they should induce Musa. There are a few machlokes in the yeshiva in Volozhin. That was the tradition. The European yeshivas used to have a lot of big, major machlokes. And some of the Talmidim were so angry at what was going on in the yeshiva, so they sent letters to the government that the yeshiva is a hotbed of revolutionary activity. So the government sent investigators to try to find out what's going on, but they didn't know Yiddish. So how are they going to find out whether there's any revolutionary activity? So every time they came, they didn't see any revolutionary activity. But they were afraid it may be that they're preparing a revolution. So they kept on making the yeshiva such tzaris till they'll close down the yeshiva. So that's why they insisted, not that they were interested, all the Jews should make a parnasa, they should get a secular education. They want to close down the yeshiva because they heard, they were told incorrectly, that it was a hotbed of revolutionary activity. So it's interesting, the Netziv was not a descendant of Rav Chaim Voloshin. The Netziv married the daughter of Rav Itzel Voloshin. He married into the family. Then his first wife died and he remarried the daughter of the Aruch HaShulchan, who was his niece. That's why the Torah Tamima, who was the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, wrote an autobiography. So he writes about his years when he learned in Volozhin. So whenever he refers to the Netziv, he calls him Dodi Gisi, my uncle, my brother-in-law. First he was his uncle, because the Netziv's sister was married to the Aruch HaShulchan, that was the mother of the Torah Tamima. Then later on, the Netziv's second wife was the sister of the Torah Tamima. So it was his brother-in-law. So he always refers to him, my uncle, my brother-in-law. Dodi Gisa, my uncle, my brother-in-law. So the family was upset. Well, they have to be upset. The family was upset. The descendants of Reb Chaim Lurie were upset about the Netziv, that he was an outsider. He was not a direct descendant of Reb Chaim Lurie. That's called Beis HaRav. That's a big yichus in Lithuania. Those were descendants of Reb Chaim Lurie. For some reason or another, the descendants of the Vilna Gaon are not considered such a big yichus. The descendants of Reb Chaim Lurie. By the Hasidim, they say the reason why was because when the Vilna Gaon made the cherem against the Hasidim, so the claim Reb Chaim Lurie refused to sign the cherem. So that's why, that's what the Hasidim say. That's why the Beis HaRav, the big covet is those who are descendants of Reb Chaim Lurie as opposed to those who are descendants of the Vilna Gaon. There used to be, for many years, there was a learned rabbi, Talmud Chacham Yossi Buchsbaum, was the head of Machon Yerushalayim, and he used to collect Kisvei Yad, and he used to do a lot of historical research to write all the Hatamas to the Svarim that Machon Yerushalayim put out. So he said he doesn't understand what that means. The Reb Chaim Lurie had refused to sign the Cherem. He says, he knows his handwriting. He says, the Cherem was written by Reb Chaim Lurie. The handwriting is Reb Chaim Lurie. He doesn't understand. But that's what the Chassidim said. That's the reason why Reb Chaim Lurie's descendants are called the Beis HaRav, because the yichus was that he refused to sign the Cherem. So after the first wife of the Netziv passed away, and he married someone else, not from the family, and he was still the Rosh Yeshiva for the last 39 years of Reb Chaim Lurie. So there were many direct descendants of Reb Chaim Lurie who tried to depose him. In fact, the Ruach Hayim, the Sefer on Pirkei Avos, the Drushas of Reb Chaim Lurie, the Sefer was initially put out by one of the direct descendants who was trying to demonstrate that he deserves to be the Rosh Yeshiva. So it was originally put out in order to kick out the Netziv, but they didn't succeed. They didn't succeed, and he remained the Rosh Yeshiva till they closed the Yeshiva. There was a period of time that Reb Chaim, the Netziv appointed Reb Chaim Soloveitchik as a Magid Shir in the Yeshiva. So the people had a complaint. They felt that it was nepotism. They felt that Reb Chaim Soloveitchik was not worthy of saying Yeshiva. So they called the meeting of the board. The board consisted of alumni of the Yeshiva who had smicha, who were prominent Rabbanim. So when they had the machlekes, the Talmidim made home machlekes who should be Rosh Yeshiva, the Netziv or the Beis HaLevi. Beis HaLevi was a direct descendant of Reb Chaim Lurie. He was Beis HaRav, the Netziv was not. So when that machlekes, there was no machlekes between the Netziv and the Beis HaLevi. They got along very well together, but there was a machlekes between the Talmidim, who should be officially the Rosh Yeshiva. So they called the members of the board to make they made up Shara. And then when the Netziv appointed Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, who had married his granddaughter, he married the daughter of Rabbi Foil Shapiro, who had married the daughter of the Netziv. So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik married the granddaughter of the Netziv. So they said he's not worthy. So the members of the board came and they said, let Reb Chaim Soloveitchik get up and say a shir, and they'll decide whether it's good, whether he's worthy of saying a shir or not. So Reb Soloveitchik told over the story on different occasions that Reb Chaim gave a shir. Then the middle, they answer a difficulty in the Rambam. And then in the middle of the shir, he realized that there was a favor from the Pirush HaMishnayos Rambam somewhere that contradicted what he was trying to say. He was trying to defend the Rambam based on a certain idea, and he realized that it was wrong. So in the middle of the shir, that was going to determine whether he's worthy or not, that's going to make or break his position in the yeshiva, he said he just realized that it was all wrong, and he sat down in the middle, because there's a Rambam that contradicts what he had in mind to say. So we speak about Reb Chaim's intellectual honesty. He could have given the shir, no one would have realized that. No one knew that there's a Pirush HaMishnayos that contradict what he wanted to say. But he had intellectual honesty and he sat down. So the members of the board decided, if a man is so honest that he backs down from a shir, even though nobody realized that there was anything wrong, he deserves to be the Rosh Yeshiva. And they allowed him to remain. So there was a period of time that they both gave shirin and the yeshiva. The Talmidim brought it up that the Netziv would give shir Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Each shir would cover approximately a block Gemara. And Reb Chaim would say the shir Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Shabbos day with Chaza. And every shir they would cover approximately a block Gemara. So some of the Talmidim, I think most of the Talmidim attended 6 days a week. They attended all the shiurim. Some of them only attended the Netziv shiurim. They didn't go for Rav Chaim shiurim, like Rav Kook. Didn't go for Rav Chaim shiurim. Rav Chaim didn't go for the Rav Kook either. But they say that the Netziv only gave permission to Rav Kook, the only student. He allowed him to wear tefillin in the Beis Medrash all day long. Rav Chaim didn't like it. Rav Chaim was upset. Rav Kook didn't go from Rav Chaim's new style of learning, and Rav Chaim didn't go from Rav Kook's style either. So there was some Talmidim who only attended Rav Chaim's shir, because it was a new derech. Many Talmidim only attended the Netziv shir, that was the traditional style of learning. And I think most of the Talmidim attended both. I don't understand how it blended in such a totally different style. Rav Zevin quotes in Isha Meshitas, he quotes the incident that on one occasion Rav Chaim felt bad. Why the Talmidim, many Talmidim are only coming to the shir, they're not attending the Netziv shir. So he once gave the shir, a knockout shir, a whole maroche, two dinim, tzvei dinim. And then after he finished the whole shir, so he told them everything is printed in the commentary of the Netziv on the shiltas. He just presented it in his terminology, tzvei dinim. Every so often, the Netziv has something really like a shir klali, that's really a brisker shir. Yes, when you learn brachas daf lamedhem and aleph, so Tosfos Zeh discusses what's the din of neter avay b'chutz la'aretz. So the Tosfos quotes from the Shiltas that you should be poyder the neter avay b'chutz la'aretz on shavu pruta, and then you can eat it. So the Achronim ask on the quotation that Tosfos quotes from the Shiltas. Shiltas is supposed to be a sefer psak halacha lamaisa. So he says you put it in neter, but I forgot to say a brocha. Shekudashon, whenever you put it maaser sheni, you say a brocha. So how come he doesn't say a brocha? Then he says you put the iron maaser, iron, you put the iron neter, but he forgot to say maaser chemish. You put it to somebody else's, you only give carrot. Then you put the, you have to be maaser chemish. He forgot to say, and then the shiltas writes you can be put the anashava puta. How can you put the anashava puta? The Gemara says, "Kol ha'tarakulu shavah puto shavah kesef is kesef," with three exceptions to the rule. So the one that's most famous is pidya ma'aser sheni. You can get on it. It's kesef kesef sheish alav tzur, has to be cash. Shavah kesef is not acceptable for pidya ma'aser sheni. So how come the shiltas is supposed to be a sefer psak? How to observe the mitzvahs? And he tells you the din, and he made three mistakes. If you got to mention the brocha, if you got to say a ma'aser chemish, and he forgot that shavah kesef is no good. Only kesef is good, how can it be? And then there's another, fourth kasha, these are kashas on the quotation from the shiltas. Then this is on the daf, lamehem and aleph and broch, it's the first daf in case of mevorchim. So this has another kasha, that the Torah says in Chumash Dvarim that there's pidyon ma'aser sheni, and there's exerusha b'kodesh kodesh connecting ma'aser sheni and neter avay. So that there's pidyon neter avay, we would know, based on the exerusha b'kodesh kodesh ma'aser sheni. So how come the Gemara here, and brachas lamehem et aleph needs a pasuk kodesh hilulim lashem yedarshim hilulim as if it were written hilulim, and hilulim means pidyon achlei v'hadar achlei, can be poided in that tervai. I would have known this pidyon that tervai from the gzeirah shabbat kodesh kodesh. So these are the four kashas. So the Netziv has all the four kashas in his sefer on parshas kedoshim, and he talks about that tervai, and he has one teretz on everything, that there are tzvei dinim. There's what din of pidyon neter revai ma'aser sheni was a pidyon shal mitzvah. When it's a pidyon shal mitzvah, then you say bracha. But it was only a pidyon hamatir. Then it's learned off in this pasuk achlei v'hader achlei. So when it's a pidyon shal mitzvah, then you say bracha. When it's a pidyon hamatir, there's no bracha. When it's a mitzvah, it makes sense to talk about Tosefes Chaimish, because a din deraisa Tosef says you can only have. Let's say the get should have been written like this, and b'di'evad it didn't write it like that. The get will be kosher b'di'evad. Or l'chatchila you shouldn't cook on the cliche and even yomam, but b'di'evad if you did, it's kosher. So the difference between l'chatchila and b'di'evad, Tosfos says, is a dead giveaway that it's a din d'rabbanan. On the level of the raisa, there's no difference, unless you're talking about a mitzvah. So the mitzvah b'shleimus, let's say, mitzvah b'shleimus is to have a korban chatos. To do four zrikas and the god dalek karnas on his back. But yeah, but if you do one zrika, so we pass like this hilo, that the korban will be kosher. So if it's a mitzvah, then it's shaykh to talk about lachatchil b'di'evad. If it's a matir, so you can't talk about lachatchil b'di'evad. So the din is Tosefes Chaim is not Miyakeh B'Di'Evin. So it makes sense to say Yemosef Chamish when it's a Chidush HaMitzvah, when it's Neter Avayah in Eretz Yisrael, or when it's Maaseh Sheni. So then you say Bracha when you do the Pidyon, and V'chatchili Yemosef Chamish and B'Di'Evin, it's not Miyakeh. But here you're learning out from the Pasuk that there's another Parsha Pidyon, a Pidyon HaMatir, that's not a Kiyam HaMitzvah, that's on Revayah B'Chutz La'aretz. You don't have the mitzvahs at least, but you just have the isurim. You have the isurim of Revayah, that you're not allowed to eat the chutz to Yerushalayim, but you don't have the mitzvah to bring it to Yerushalayim. And the same thing, not only on that the Revayah, not on the Revayah, the chutz Lord, same thing as on Maaseh Sheni Shein Bo Shavu Pruta. Also, there's no mitzvah to be put, quote the Shita Mekubeh, there's no mitzvah to be put, but there's a Pidyon HaMatir. So he answers all the kashas for that. On Pidyon Shal Mitzvah, the din is you need Dafke Kesef Sheish Olav Tzur. Pidyon HaMatir, even Shavu Kesef is Kekesef. So that's fantastic. He has four kashas, murderous kashas. He has one teretz on all the four kashas, that there is a dinim. And he explains, he proves each thing very fascinating. That's, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the shir that Rav Chaim said over in the yeshiva one fine day, and then he showed them that everything is printed in the Netziv's commentary on the Shiltas. He wanted them to have their acheretz for the Netziv, that in his svarim he also has his style of the tzvedinim and the analysis and everything. And Sid has a very fascinating comment when he completed his commentary on the Shiltas. So he raises a question. Does it make sense to recite Shach Yonah when you complete writing a Sefer? So he writes, he just finished his commentary on the Shiltas. So he writes, we're going to run through Shas and to see every time they mention Shach Yonah, and you're going to try to put everything together. So he runs through all of Shas with the Shach Yonah. And they're very fascinating. He throws comments here and there. Everything is fascinating. He likes the Chasam Sefer's comment on the last piece, the Gemara in Psochim. The Gemara says, when you make a Pidyon HaBen, so the Gemara has a suffix, who says Shach Yonah? Does the Kohen say Shach Yonah because he's $5 richer? He has Chamish Loim more than he had before? Or does the Adi HaBen say Shach Yonah because he's performing the mitzvah? So the Chasam Sefer has a comment, and then it's, he likes it, he quotes it in his name, and he fits it into the Gemara. He says, the truth of the matter is they both say Shach Yonah. The Kohen should say Shach Yonah because he's $5 richer. Now the Aben should say Shach Yonah because he's doing a mitzvah that hardly ever comes up. A lot of people never have the mitzvah in their whole lifetime. So it's a rare mitzvah, so you say Shach Yonah. The Gemara Shaila was, who says Shach Yonah? Who should say Shach Yonah to be Moitzi himself and the other one? But they should really both say Shach Yonah. The whole deal was, who should say Shach Yonah on behalf of both of them? So in that discussion, when he's quoting, he's gone to all the Gemaras, all the Shachanos, he quotes among the various sources, he quotes the minig in Shulchan Aruch that one doesn't recite Shachana during the 3 weeks. We have the minig on Shabbos, he say, but on the weekdays you don't say. So the Magen Avraham is bothered with Akasha. How can you say one in Avelis doesn't say, we observe Avelis during the 3 weeks, it's Avelis like Yudeis Chodesh. So the Magen Avraham asked Akasha. The Gemara says that if a person dies and he leaves a Yerusha for his son, so the son says, two brachas, says, Dain ha'em is that the father died. And he says, Shach Yonah, that he got a big Yerusha. If he shares the Yerusha with others in the family, then he says, Atev ha'meitiv. If he doesn't share with any, he only says, Atev ha'meitiv, if it's a hatobe that's shared with others. It's not shared with anybody else, then he says, Shach Yonah. So he says, his father died. And he says, Baruch Dain ha'em, and he says, Shach Yonah. So how can you say that you can't say Shach Yonah in the 3 weeks? It doesn't make any sense. 3 weeks is less of an avelus than over there. So then Magen Avraham gives an answer. It's a little unclear what he answers. So then Itziv elaborates on it. So he has interesting. He said the Shach Yonah on a pre-chodosh. The Shulchan Aruch says you don't say Shach Yonah on a pre-chodosh during the 3 weeks. So he says Shach Yonah pre-chodosh is not really over the excitement of the pre-chodosh. That's, I'm allergic to that fruit. I can't afford that fruit. They're selling it in the stores. So Medina the Gemara, he says Shach Yonah, when you see them selling it in the stores, even if you can't eat it, even if you can't stand it, because you realize that you survived to another season. I see that they're selling watermelons. I realize it's the summer season. In the winter, they never sell watermelons. Or I see they're selling whatever, cherries, berries, whatever. So I realize that I have Shach Yonah, V'kimon, V'kimon, L'zman Hazeh. If you buy a new suit or you buy a house or something, that's a Shach Yonah on the excitement. This is on the excitement of buying the new suit, of buying the new house or something. This is a Shach Yonah on Hagoyas Hazman, Shach Yonah Hazman Hazeh. It's a sense that the Shekhinah on Pri Chodesh is a different kind of Shekhinah. It's on the fact that I have lived to see this new season. So this season of the year, the 3 weeks, is an unlucky season. The Ben Amtzarim was prophesied by the Nevi'im. The Ben Amtzarim is an unlucky season for the Jewish people. So that's why you don't say that Shekhinah. But it doesn't mean you don't say that Moshe Feinstein talks about not staying Shekhinah. So he's concerned about the... He says, if you buy a new car, see if the car is going to be shared with other members of the family, then you don't say, Shachan and say, Teva Amitim, so then it's not a problem. Then you can buy the new car and you can say, Teva Amitim. But if you're a single boy and he doesn't share the use of the car with anybody else, then he has to say, Shachan, and then he shouldn't buy the car during Sphere, because we don't say, Shachan. According to Din and Tziv, it's not true. That's a different kind of Shachan. He's interpreting in the Magen Avraham. That the only Shekhinah we refrain from reciting during the 3 weeks is the Shekhinah on Pri Chodesh. The Gemara says that that's a Rishus. The Gemara doesn't say that all Shekhinahs are Rishus. This one is a Rishus. The others are not necessarily Rishus. One of the very famous Chidushim of the Netziv in his commentary on the Shilta says, has a long Marocha where he develops a whole fantastic Chidush. That you have a hechshe mitzvah hakos about Torah. Let's say a person knows how to tie tzitzis. So rather than buy a talis that has a tzitzis tied on it, it would be preferable he should buy a talis in the chutei tzitzis separately. He should tie it himself because mitzvah bo yos bevishlucha. But tying the tzitzis is not the mitzvah. Wearing the beged is the mitzvah. Tying the tzitzis is only a hechshe mitzvah. So the tzitzis comes up with this chiddush, a hechshe mitzvah hakos about Torah. Has a status of a semi-mitzvah, so with respect to certain dinim, it's considered like a mitzvah, so we would say mitzvah bo yosem b'shlucha. It's a big chiddush. I remember once, right after Mohammed Sheshet Bayamim, there was a big hesaurus in Eretz Yisrael. A lot of people saw Yad Hashem, and it was a very good time to try to do kirov activities. So one of the big rabban from Eretz Yisrael, Moshe Tzvi Neria, the one who founded all of the yeshivot Bnei Akiva in Eretz Yisrael, came to America and he was trying to encourage Bnei Torah, Bnei Yeshiva, come to Eretz Yisrael and do kirov activities. So one of the first places that he came was Yeshiva University, and he came in Rav Soloveitchik that year was learning Maseches Sukkah, and Rav Neria sat through this year, and then after this year he asked permission to encourage his students to come to Eretz Yisrael. So then in the middle of this year, he raised his hand and he asked permission. He spoke this year was in English. He was speaking in Hebrew. So he asked permission to ask a question, to ask a kasha on the shir. So he mentioned this nitziv about the Hechshe Mitzvah Kasabat Torah, which is pretty famous. The Stipler quotes and many others quoted. And they talk about this big chiddush, that with respect to certain halachas, we treat a Hechshe Mitzvah Kasabat Torah like a mitzvah. So Rav Soloveitchik never heard of it. This is not one of his nitzivs. He heard of others. The family that used to be referred to the Tzvi was a Parsha Leib, because his name was Naftali Tzvi, Tzvi is Herschel, and Yehuda, Yehuda Leib. So they called him a Parsha Leib. So this one he never heard of. He has a lot of famous pieces. This one Rav Soloveitchik did know about. We've looked Kiyas the Miyushav before Musaf, after Prokhav after Haftarah is over. Then we build Tkir the Miyumah in the middle of the Chazar Sashat. So why do we call it Tkir the Miyushav? Because it's not in the middle of the Amidah. The Tkir in the middle of the Chazar Sashat, in the middle of the Amidah, that's called Tkir the Umad. So by many Sfardim, the meaning is the Chidor, because many Sfardim have a minute, they sit during the Tkir the Miyushav. Why do they sit? Daket to sit. So the Netziv has a fantastic Chiddush, and he interprets Pshat and the Tesis and Avri Psochem based on this, that really, the Iker Adin, maybe the Raisen, maybe Takana the Rabban, the Iker Adin really is he's supposed to blow Tkiyas on Seder HaBrochas in the Hazar Sashatz. And if you're going to blow Tkiyas before Musaf, you blew it, you're ready for Yoytze. So the Tkiyas that you're going to blow in the middle of Hazar Sashatz, on that Al Seder HaBrochas, you're ready for Yoytze. You're supposed to, the Chachamim or the Din Daraisen is to be Yoytze Tkiyas. To be Yoytze Tkiyas in the middle of the Hazar Sashatz, not to be Yoytze before. Then to blow a second time. The Taisa seems to say that when they blow Shofar before Musaf, the kids, the Meyushav, everybody should have in mind not to be Yotze. So why do you say a bracha? So Taisa explains why. You say a bracha because it belongs to Shofar, but you have in mind not to be yotze, because then you won't be yotze to kiyos al seder abrocha. They said the same by matzah. At the beginning of the meal on Pesach night, you say hamoytzi al achilas matzah, but you have in mind not to be yotze. Tosfos claim. Tosfos in the Rashbam claim. The ikar mitzvah of matzah is to be nechal al asova, just like the korban Pesach is supposed to be nechal at the end of the meal al asova. So the matzah in the morrow is supposed to be at the end of the meal. So when you eat the matzah at the beginning of the meal, it's supposed to have in mind not to be yotze. So the Netziv has this fantastic pshat. That's what the meaning by many sfadim is that they sit. He says the pshat is they sit to demonstrate that they have in mind not to be yotze, because the goyim said there are six mitzvot that you're supposed to fulfill in a standing position, and one of them is a sfir soimer, a tikr bakom ela bakoma. You should stand. And all about shat. One of this says lachem. So tikr shofar is supposed to be yotze in the mitzvah in a standing position. So the people sit to demonstrate that they have a mind not to be yotze. So how come the Baal Tekeah doesn't sit? Only the tzibur sits. So he says apparently the goyim who introduced this practice are of the opinion that mitzvahs ain't sviches kavana. So if you do a mitzvah, even if you have kavana beferish or lelotzeis, you're yotze bal korchacha. We don't pass like that, but the Beis quotes such an opinion. The Ra'or holds like that. So then the Tziv says the Batuke is actually blowing shofar. So even if it's going to have kavana shalolotz, it's going to be yotze anyway. So the Batuke has no choice. He's going to be yotze whether he likes it or not. So he may as well stand, because that's the minhag that you stand when you fulfill the mitzvah of shofar. But the Tzibur should sit, because Shemei Kaina only applies if you want to be yotze. If you have kavana shelo lotzes, you don't say Shemei Kaina. That's one of the more famous chidushim of the Netziv. The Shiltas quotes on the Gemara in the end of Bava Basra. There's a Mishnah in the end of Bava Basra. There's a Shibud Orev. If the loiva borrows money from the malva, and the co-signer agrees that if the loiva doesn't pay, he agrees that he'll pay. So the Gemara asks, How do you know that the Orev is mechuyev to pay? The Malva never lent him the money. The Malva lent the money to the Loiva, so the Matmois, the receiving of the money, but the Loiva is mechuyev the Loiva to pay back, but the Orev never received the money. So the Gemara learns it out from the pasuk that Yehuda says, Anochi Erevenu, Minayin Orev Menatar, Yehuda says, Anochi Erevenu. So the Gemara argues and says, what kind of a raya is that? So Pashtus is, it should be, what kind of a raya is that? Yehuda is not an Orev. He uses a melitza on Nechi Abena. He's the loifer. He's telling the father, give me Yehuda, give me Binyamin, and I'll see to it that I give him back to you. So Yehuda is the loifer. He's not the Orev. Orev is if someone else is the loifer. And I say, I'll agree to pay if he doesn't pay. But over here, Yehuda is the loifer. So the Girsas HaGanim and the Gemara is the Gemara rejected it. You can't learn from Yehuda, Nochi Avenu, because there he was an Orev Kaplan. An Orev Kaplan? Orev Kaplan means like this. Usually there's a din, and God meant Orev Tchila. If the Loiva barred from the Malva, so first the Malva should go to the Loiva to try to collect, and if he doesn't have any money, then he has a right to go to the Orev. But if he's an Orev Kaplan, means he agrees that the Malva has a right to approach him to collect the debt even without first going to the Loiva. He doesn't have to try to go. So where did he say Yehuda was an Orev Kablan? Where was he an Orev? He was a Loiva. So he has in his commentary on the Shiltas, because the Shiltas quotes that. The reason why he can't learn from you is because he was an Orev Kablan. What does it have to do with Orev Kablan? So he quotes another strange Gemara. The Gemara in Elanaris has a Machloikis. There's a machlokes atanayim. Do you say kamle with the rabbinate only that misa passes from mamon? What about koris? There's koris patam. So we pass cannot. Koris does not pass from mamon. But according to the Tanna, who holds that even what's his name from Chuli Menakon holds that koris also you say kamle with the rabbinate. So there's a machlokes abay v'rabba. What would Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana say if it would be misa b'dei shamayim? Does misa b'dei shamayim also pata? So it's a machlokes abay v'rabba. So one of them says he learned out zeru shava osin. The institution of kamle with the rabbi is learned that from the pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim where it says masin yeh m'lo yosain onish yonish masin yeh v'nasat nefesh tachas nefesh. So he learned out the din of kamle with the rabbi here. So the word osin appears, and here the word osin appears. Ukra'o asan, baderach. Yaakov Avinu was afraid to let Binyamin go because of Krau Asim Adara. So the Gemara says, Yaglanik Zevashav Asin Asin, that Krau Asim Adara is Misav Dei Shamayim. What in the world does it have to do with Misav Dei Shamayim? How can you learn out that even Misav Dei Shamayim, you may come Levi Dirabmane and Zevashav? So then Steve explains, Yaakov Avinu was afraid to let, the whole parsha doesn't make sense. He was afraid to let Binyamin go. An accident may happen on the highway. An accident can happen at home also. The wall can fall down. If he's worried about an accident, it can happen anywhere. So Rashi on the Chumash quotes from the Chazal. Asot mekatrek b'shas ha-sakona. Kol ha-drachim mecheska sakona. Whenever you go on a highway, there's a sakona. And asot mekatrek b'shas ha-sakona. So Yaakov Avinu was afraid, not that an accident may occur. He was afraid maybe Binyamin had done some avera for which he deserves misa b'dei shamayim. And the Sotam will be Mekatrik B'Shas HaSakana. He'll come to collect the Misa V'Dei Shamayim from Binyamin. So Yehuda says, Anochi E'ervenu, I will be an Orev Kablon. If the Sotam comes to collect Binyamin's life, I will tell the Sotam, take my life instead. Because I promised the father, he's not a Loiva. He's an Orev Kablon. He says, if the Sotam will come to collect Binyamin's life for some avera that he did, so I'll say, come take my life instead. That's an Orev Kablon. Instead of going first to the Baal Avera, he offers a whole fantastic shot. The Netziv has a lot of times, he has a Chiddush, so he'll write it in the Shiurim, in the Meraim Esoda, and I'll write it in the Tshuvas, and I'll write it in his commentary on Shir HaShirim, in his commentary on the Chumash. He writes it in all of his form. So he has places in different Masechtas, I think in Psachim Dafnun and in other places. Taisus is bothered with the kasha. Rashi has the same kasha. The Gemara says, "Le'olam me'asu ganam teri mitzvah shalod l'shma." So mitoch shalod l'shma, bo l'shma. It's not so bad to do a mitzvah shalod l'shma. Not so bad to learn Torah shalod l'shma. Then there's another Gemara. Kol olam teri shalod l'shma, noach lo ilu shalod nepcha shel yosa al ponav. Would have been better that he should have died before he was born. He doesn't deserve to live. So it's outright contradiction. Is it such a terrible thing to learn Shalod Shema? Is it not so bad? So Rashi and Tosfos say, the two kinds of Shalod Shema. If he's learning in order to get covered, in order to make a parnosa, he's learning in order to be a Rebbe. So that's not so nice. But if he's learning Lekanter, he's just learning in order to show the others that they don't know how to learn, to show them up. So that's nasty. And that's an aver. So the Netziv has a different answer. And he writes it in all of the Svarim, and he has a tshuva halach lemaisa about that. He has a shayla halach lemaisa. There's a big Talmud Chacham, but he's not a rabbi in a shul. So he never gets aseres hadibros, he never gets chazak, he never gets the fat aliyahs. The rabbi of the shul gets aliyahs, but he's a bigger Talmud Chacham than the rabbi, and he holds that it's a bizayin ha-Torah that he doesn't get the aseres hadibros and chazak and everything. So he wants to found his own shul, Mipnei Kovod HaTorah. So the Netziv says that that's the answer to Tosfos Kasha. Are you learning what it says? You're learning Shalod Shema, or are you being Mechadish Shalod Shema? To learn Shalod Shema, you're learning what it says in the Gemara, that's not such a terrible avera. That's not so bad. The other Me'atzakan HaTorah Shalod Shema. But if you're learning, if you're being Mechadish Shalod Shema, that you're not allowed to do. So he says, to found a new yeshiva, Shalod Shema, if there's a need for yeshiva. So you found the yeshiva, but you found a new yeshiva because you want to be the Rosh Yeshiva, and no yeshiva is giving you a job. Or you're founding a new shul. There are enough shuls, we don't need another shul. You're founding a shul because you feel that you deserve to get all the big aliyah, shlishi and aseres hadibros and so on. So he says, to do a dovah chodesh, to be mechadish something, Shalod Shema, he holds that that's not permissible. The learn Shalod Shema, that's not so bad. It's interesting, just today, this morning, we were talking a little bit about Hilchos Tzitzis. So the Meshev Dover has two tshuvas about Tzitzis. The first tshuva of the Meshev Dover is a letter that he sent to the Chafetz Chaim, who was the general editor of the Mishnah Berurah. So he says in the Mishnah Berurah, it says that if you wear a tiny abakafis, it doesn't really, it's like a baby size, it's not your size. So it's a bracha about tov, and you're not yotzi any mitzvah. And if you wear it on Shabbos in the street, chutz la'erev, then you're a violation of haitzuah on the strings. The chutzei tzitzis, if they're not kosher to be mekayim a mitzvah, if you're not being yotzi a mitzvah, then it's a masoi. It's only considered Rob Lebega, Quebec Adamison, et on est text of the vibration of it. So if it's serving the purpose of philogamism. So then it says that's not true. There is no such thing. The Gemara says if you have pasul tzitzis on a talis, and after Shabbos is over, you're going to take them off and put on kosher tzitzis. So the pasul tzitzis on mechubal beged, not in a normal fashion, because you're going to take it off, because it's pasul. But if you have tzitzis on a beged, that's the way you wear the whole beged all week long. So it's mechubal beged, beged ami. That's arka bekach. So that's not hoitzah. There is no such din, that whenever you're not yaitzeh, it's supposed to be, I think, such a chuvus harif. If you wear tzitzis balaylo, so it's an isur hoitzah, since the man of, if you wear tzitzis on Shabbos in the street balaylo, it's an isur hoitzah, because you're not being yaitzeh mitzvah. So then it's wouldn't go along with that, and it holds not so. Then the tziv has also, then it's Ziv writes about Shnas HaShmita. He was a big supporter of the Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. And he says, we have to all support, and everybody should always buy an Esrog from Eretz Yisrael. And even if it's the Sukkah is following Shnas HaShmita, and there's a problem that there's a Kedusha's Perish Shviz on the Esrog, and if you give money, so the Din Shviz is Tofeses Ameho, so then when the merchants get the money, they have to use the money to buy food, and eat the food B'Kedusha's Shviz, before the Zman HaBir. Every fruit and vegetable has a Zman HaBir in the 8th year, the Shana Shminis, and if you paid money for the Esrog, so the money is Netfaz B'Kedusha Shviz, Shviz Tafesis Tamer LaKegdish, and then and the merchant who's selling the Esrog is not going to buy food, he's going to put the money in a bank account, so it's going to be in violation of the Din. So then it says, he followed what he insisted on buying an Esrog, so there it is well. And he followed what it says in the Gemara, in the last parak of Maseches Avodah Zarah, that Shviz Tafes is the mel is only when it's Zet Tachazet. So he says, he asked the merchant who was selling the Esrogim, will you sell me the Esrog B'Hakofa, on credit, and I'll pay after Yontav is over. So they trusted him. They're not going to trust everybody. They trusted in it. See? So after Sukkot, he had his wife make marmalade out of it, and he ate the whole thing up. After he ate it up, then he paid the money. So the Gemara says, once he ate it up already, then there is no Zet HaChazer, so then it's not Tofes HaZdamer. So he was Makbe Davkit to support the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael, Davkit to buy an Esru from Eretz Yisrael, but he held that it had Kedusha's Perishvi, so he didn't want the merchant to violate the din of Kedusha's Damim. So he ate it up first. Then it has an interesting tshuva. They asked him that the Talmiyim of the Maharam Rutenberg wrote that the Rebbe's practice was that he would not wear talis with tzitzis chutz le'erev on Shabbos. So different Talmiyim of the Maharam Rutenberg wrote down different reasons. So some of the Talmiyim wrote that he was choshish with the sheet of the Balamor, that the tcheles ma'keves is alavan, and the male, if you have chutz tzitzis on the beggar, it's a masoi. According to the Nitziv himself, it really shouldn't be a masa because he wear it all week long like that. But I don't know. That's a good question. So other Talmidim of the Maharam Rutenberg said that the reason why he wouldn't wear tzitzit chutz le'erev, because he was the Maharam Rutenberg, wouldn't wear chutz le'erev, he was afraid the strings may rip in such a way that it'll be possible, that it'll be an Isur Haitzor. So they asked the Nitziv, what does he think the real reason is? So he thinks that the real reason was that it was chashish for the Maharam Rutenberg. But the Talmidim who are closer to Maharam Rutenberg, he was choshish for the Balamor Shita. The Trelis Makkevis, says, since we don't have any Trelis, in the days of Maharam Rutenberg, they didn't have any Trelis, so he was afraid that maybe the Chutim are wasted, there's no Kima Mitzvah and Tzaytzor. And he says, those Talmidim who are not so close to the Maharam, they were guessing, so they said, they thought the reason why he's afraid the strings are going to rip. But he thinks that Talmidim who are closer really understood better, and the real reason was that it was choshish for the Balamor Shita. The Beis Halevi has a Sefer HaChumash, and in between Bereishis and Shmos, it's only on Bereishis and Shmos, and in between he has a page with four paragraphs, Shelo Lehotzi Hanero Cholok, not to waste a blank page. So he has one little paragraph that he saw in a Sefer that just came out recently. He doesn't want to identify the author of the Sefer because he's going to disagree with him. So he saw in a Sefer, the Sefer is called Reshes Bikurim. It was the first sefer, the only sefer put up by Rabbi Tzalo Vilna, the older brother of Rabbi Shlomo of Vilna. They were both Dayanim and Vilna at the same time, the two brothers. So Rabbi Tzalo Vilna writes that he once visited Trieste in Italy, and they used to duchen every day. So when they heard that he's a Kohen, they said, we're going to be mechabed you to duchen. What do you mean? Everybody duchen. So he said, no, their minig is only one Kohen says the duchening. The other Kohenim stand there, they don't say a word, and they just yotzi duchening, which are mea Kohenim. So Rabbi Tzalo Vilna never heard of such a practice. Then he started looking into the Gemara, and he realized it's the Beferish and Mishnah Megillah. There's a Mishnah Megillah that you have to reward somebody for doing a good thing, so you have him duchen. What do you mean, have him duchen? Everybody, all the Kohenim are going to duchen. So obviously this was the minig bizman on Mishnah, that only one Kohen said the duchening, and all the others would be yotzi b'shemeh Kohenah, and you see that that's the pshat. So the Beis HaLevi writes, he saw in a sefer that came out recently, he doesn't want to identify the sefer because he's going to disagree, and he thinks that it's wrong, that since duchening has to be b'kol ram, and Shemeh Kohenah is considered as if he said Yirach Hashem v'yishmerecha, but he can't be considered as if he said it b'kol ram, so he can't say Shemeh Kohenah. So the tziv, in the end of the first chelik of Meshev Dover, has Ha'oris, a few pages of Ha'oris on Orachaim. Short Ha'oris. So he writes, he saw in the sefer that came out recently, he doesn't want to embarrass, doesn't want to write whom. He's coming to attack the Beis HaLevi. So nothing personal, but he wants to say he doesn't agree with him. So he said, how can, he saw in the sefer that you can't say Shemeh Kohenah by duchening because you need Kol Ram. And Shemeh Kohenah is considered as if you said it, but not considered as if you said it b'kol ram. So he says it's not true, because when you do mikra bikurim, arami abidavi, the Gemara says it's supposed to say b'kol ram. And he shows from the Yerushalmi that you do say shemeh kohenah. So you see, when you say shemeh kohenah, if the person is saying arami abidavi b'kol ram, then it's considered as if I said it b'kol ram. So that's his hasagas. He says he agrees with what it says in the sefer, that you don't say shemeh kohenah by duchening, but he says that reason is not correct. He thinks the reason is that just like by davening, the Yerushalmi says he don't say Shemeh Kohenah, every person who wants to ask for something should ask on his own. The duchening is also Yerach Hashem Yishmerech, is a tefillah to Ribbon Shel Olam that the person should have an Arich Hazam. It's like davening. So you don't say Shemeh Kohenah, I'm davening. So in the family, Rav Soloveitchik used to say this over, and they considered the Netziv an outsider because it wasn't Rav Chaim's Derech, and he wasn't a descendant from the Beis HaRav. So they say over, that's how they told me, that Rabbi Beryl Soloveitchik and Yerushalayim said the same, that the Netziv didn't understand what the Beis HaLevi meant. Beis HaLevi didn't mean that the Kol Ram doesn't carry over. The Kol Ram carries over by Mikra Bikurim, so it's considered as if Shemeh Kohenah, as if he said the Kol Ram. He meant a different thing. By duchening, what do you mean you need Kol Ram? How loud do you have to scream? You have to scream atop your lungs. So Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, depending how many people are there in the shul, you have to say loud enough that all the people in the shul should hear. So if everybody, there are only 10 people in the shul, they're all standing in the front, so you can whisper. That's called Ram. It's loud enough. If there are people all in the back of the shul, you have to say loud enough that everybody should hear. So all the idea of called Ram by duchening is that there should be a tziruf between the mevarach and the mizbarach. So that's if you're going to have Shemeh Kohenah, there's no tziruf at all. He's not saying anything. He just stands with his hands. He doesn't say a word. That's what the Beis HaLevi meant. It didn't mean that the nature of the voice doesn't carry over. The nature of the voice does carry over. By Mikra Bikurim, it's supposed to be B'kol Ram. It's considered, Shemeh Kohenah is considered as if it were B'kol Ram. He meant that over here, Kol Ram has a different purpose. He has a lot of tshuvas. He has an important tshuva about Kriyas HaTorah. I think the tshuva was sent to Chicago. Someone donated his Sefer Torah to the shul. And it was on a Sunday, and I had a whole parade. And then they were filling in Oisius, and then they decided after they finished filling in the Oisius, they're going to be Mechabit people with Aliyahs. So they opened up the Hiftah and they started giving out Aliyahs on a regular Sunday. So the Shaila says, is that permissible? Is it a Brachal of Atola? So the Netziv says that it's a Brachal of Atola. He says, you only have a right to say a Brachal. You already said Brachas HaTorah in the morning when you woke up before davening. You only have a right to say another Brachal when there's a Takas Chachamim of Kriyas HaTorah. If the day when there is Kriyas HaTorah, then if you say more Kriyas HaTorah, he doesn't think that would be a Brachal of Atola on a Monday or Thursday. He quotes, there was such a minig by Sfardim, then when a chosen, so you don't make a sofas, but when there would be a chosen, so they would give him an aliyah special aliyah. Avraham Zaken, Baba Yamin. But on the day on which the Zot HaKonos Kriyas HaDeres, he thought, there's a couple of important pieces there in that simon about the Birchas HaTorah, Aliyas, on the day when there's no takana of Kriyas HaTorah. Yeah, then it was a Rosh Yeshiva of many years. He wasn't exactly Reb Chaim style. Much of what he wrote is Reb Chaim style, just not the language. And a lot is the old style of learning. And Volozhin Yeshiva had a tremendous influence for many years on learning in Lithuania. Okay, I'm good to work, everybody.